And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Hi, I'm Dr. Roy Morgan. It's good to be with you this Saturday morning. Looks like it's going to be a beautiful day outside. Anytime that you wake up in the morning and you say, oh my goodness, I've got all these good things to do. Let me get after it. So you start the process of your day. It's really, really good. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I have this book, and I have my date that I bought it, 2/16 of 1996. It's a pretty good year. Nutritional Influences on Mental Illness by Melvin Werbach. But this guy was old school, which means he had to manually go through journals, textbooks on research, just to uncover these gems and these articles so he could put them in his book. And what Dr. Werbach has done, he's a medical doctor, he's done a great job of trying to put together articles and information to help educate people. Primarily, it's usually doctors that would buy these books because they want to find out, what can I do to help my patients? Now, you have to understand, today it's just a little bit different. A lot of times, and you know, I know this because I have people tell me stories all the time. And the story goes like this right here. What did your doctor do for you? Well, they recommended this drug. And when you went back, what happened next? They said, let's try another one. And so there seems to be a strong emphasis in modern times to give drugs for each and every ill. So what I want you to do is I want you just to kind of play along with me. Listen to this. This comes from the journal Ortho Molecular Medicine, 1987. And the topic is about dementia, but what I want you to consider is anytime that your brain starts this downward spiral and it just doesn't function the way that it used to, it's okay if we ask questions. It really, really is. And this is a review article, and it's a theoretical discussion. I realize this is 1987, not 2007 or 2017, so it may not be as cutting edge, but this is very interesting to me. And I'm going to read the brief abstract. It is postulated that in some elderly people, there is a diminution of transport of most vitamins, minerals, and essential trace elements at the blood-brain barrier, and possibly in the gut, causing deficiencies of the brain. And that's all they're saying right there. They're just saying, maybe one of the issues with dementia or Alzheimer's is a person is either A, they cannot transport the nutrients from their gut, from their diet, or they just don't have the nutrients to begin with, okay? And so you got that. Anytime that you're low in something, there's a whole bunch of stuff in the body that just doesn't get done. And I'm going to finish the article. And this is the idea right here. These deficiencies in either nutrients or minerals or trace elements, they may be the primary cause for the formation of lipofuscin and also those neurofibrillary tangles. And that's kind of one of the hallmarks of dementia. And what they're saying is it possible that we could administer vitamins and trace elements that might either halt the progression of dementia or slow it down a whole lot? And so that comes from the Journal of Ortho Molecular Medicine, 1987. Okay, here's another one right here, same topic. This one comes from Psychology in Medicine, 1986. And I think the title of the article is written by Dr. Thomas D.E. et al. Tryptophan and Nutritional Status of Patients with Senile Dementia. Senile means the dementia that you see as a byproduct of the aging process. Okay. The nutritional status of 23 severely demented patients was compared with that of 23 similarly aged controls. That means you had 23 that had pretty severe dementia and those that were perfectly normal. With the possible exception of ascorbic acid, which a lot of experts call that vitamin C, even though it is not, it's the wrapper, they showed poor nutritional status of the demented patients compared to those that were just perfectly fine. So here's an observational study showing those that have the worst dementia, they have the poorest nutrient intake. Where's the next one I saw? There was another good one in here. Okay, here's one right here. Okay, now this is a case report, but it was published in the Journal of Neurological Science, 1975. That's 1975. That's, let me see, 25. That's almost 50 years. Not exactly. What is that, 47? A 75-year-old epileptic female with severe dementia. Could you imagine the combination? I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen somebody go into an epileptic seizure, but it's been a lot. It's never fun. I think the last time that an individual started to go into a seizure and they fell, I could not run and get to them fast enough. I saw it taking place, but they were probably, 15 to 16 feet away from me, and I had to run around a desk to get there. And as they went down, I'm going, please, Lord, don't let them hit their head on the table or on the bookcase or the wall or the shelves. That'd be too hard. And you know what? They didn't. They missed it by a half inch. It was perfectly fine. I'm going, thank you, Lord. But anyway, here's a study. A 75-year-old epileptic female with severe dementia. Now get this. She demonstrated reversal of the dementia and regression of the spastic tetraparesis. That'd be the seizure part of it. Normalization of the extensor plantar responses. Improvement in the serial EEGs, that's your brainwave electrical activity, all with what? Following folate supplementation, that's a B vitamin. The article is titled, Reversible Central Nervous System Dysfunction Folate Deficiency. Okay, here's another one. This comes from the Quarterly Journal of Medicine, 1967. Okay. Now, that one's 50 years old, plus. Here it is. It's a case report. This one's interesting also. Two elderly widows, that means they were on their own, with advanced dementia and nutritional folate deficiency with anemia. So these women were anemic when they were tested by blood tests. And what they did was, they just tried to supplement with folic acid. They gave them the very thing their bodies were lacking. Following which, both the intellectual and the personality deterioration and the anemia were corrected. So they measured these two women that had advanced dementia. They found out they were low in folic acid or folate. They gave it to them. And guess what? Their personality deterioration and dementia went away. Isn't that interesting? When's the last time you've heard an article like that? It says, in addition, their abnormal EEGs, you know what a EKG is, that measures the electrical activity of the heart. Well, these were EEGs. They were trying to look for normal brain function. So their abnormal EEGs became normal over a period of several weeks. There's another key point right there. You don't snap your fingers, give somebody folic acid or folate, and instantly they become brand new again, and they go, wow, where was I? Oh, I was in the state of confusion and dementia. Doesn't work that way. This study right here, the reason why I bring it up also, really, really, it was heavily, heavily criticized. They didn't like it. Or there's a lot of people. And so there was a journal. Where did this come from? Well, let me just read this to you. This study about these two elderly women that had advanced dementia, they were given folic acid. Well, there's a lot of people that didn't like the way it turned out. And this is what they said. Number one, any anemia in the elderly may cause an organic brain syndrome. Okay, that's fine. But the solution is still the same, and what we have to look at is, what are we going to do to correct it, or what's the most positive step that we can take to help these women? So they just didn't like the idea that folic acid brought about a fast reversal. But really, what are we supposed to be doing here? You're supposed to put the patient's needs first. And sometimes that's really hard, because sometimes you have to talk to patients and you have to kind of get them to a place where they realize and they accept that it's up to them to take care of themselves. That's why it's really, really good for you to be your own advocate. So every time you go to the doctor and there's something that you really don't want to do, that you feel like is either excessive or potentially the law of diminishing returns, meaning I really don't know that I need that CAT scan, doctor, because I feel just fine and I don't need all that mega doses of radiation. Well, you got to be your own advocate. The other reason they criticized the study, and this is fair, but let me tell you about this one. Point number two. They're saying these two women with advanced dementia, what they did was, it said it's possible that the social intervention that brought them to the hospital and to a caring environment was responsible for the improvement. Okay, I'm fine with that. And what they're saying is, you can't claim that folic acid fixed their problem because we brought them to the hospital. And most likely, they're talking about the nursing staff and the physicians and probably everybody else that had contact with them. And, you know, can you blame them? I can't. How would you like it if you had advanced dementia and you were really nutrient deficient, especially in folic acid, and all of a sudden you start having people dote on you and smiling at you and touching you and, you know, holding your hand and making sure that you have clean hair, they trim your toenails. I mean, it's all good, right? So they're saying that maybe the caring staff at the hospital was what was really responsible for their improvement. Which I would counter with that one and say, that's maybe the greatest thing about going to a hospital. Maybe people are so stressed they can't think straight and they need to get out of their present environment so somebody else can show them some love and some attention, right? Okay, here's one right here. This has to do with, this is still on the same topic of dementia, and I'm just looking at the research on this, and I just find it so fascinating, because it gives you a different take on, and you already know the message here. If you haven't figured out yet, it's what you do to take care of yourself. You're really the sum total of your environment. And part of your environment is the food that you eat and what you choose to put in your mouth. There's really no way through this without trying to study and to learn and to grow. You know, in the Bible it says, grow in the grace and the knowledge of Jesus Christ. Well, if you go back to the New Testament principle of ask and it shall be given to you, seek and ye shall find, knock and the door shall be opened, it always begs the question, well, how hard are you going to try to seek? Isn't that obvious? If you're going to ask, don't you have to be in a position where you can't ask? Such as, what do you think is causing, you know, these issues? But you've got to be willing to knock on the door. That means you got to go to the door. So there's effort involved. Here it is right here. Clinical Psychiatry News, September 1989. This comes from the European College of Neuropsychopharmacology. I think I butchered that word, sorry. Here's the study. Vitamin B12 deficiency was about four times more frequent in patients with senile dementia of the Alzheimer's type than in aged-matched patients with Alzheimer's disease. Vascular dementia or controls. That's just another way of saying that they're noticing that people that have Alzheimer's and dementia, it's so much more frequent to find a B12 deficiency. And I don't have the chart in front of me, but I remember years ago studying the physician's analysis of B12 issues. And I want to say, just a simple blood test, he was making the observation that unless you could get the vitamin B12 levels in the blood at about 950 to 1200, he didn't really see any improvement of dementia or a cognitive decline. So a lot of these things are dose dependent. And of course, you already know what I'm doing. I'm just telling you one simple thing here. But the reason that it's vitamin B12, it's critical for regeneration and repair of nerve tissue. You've got to have it. Here's another one right here. This comes from Psychogeriatrics Journal, 1987, pages 32 and 33. 16 out of 81 geriatric patients, they had deficient serum B12 levels, just what I was referring to. Compared to a group of 139 non-demented geriatric patients, that means they didn't have dementia or Alzheimer's, they said the incidence of B12 deficiency was four times as great among the demented patients. See there? There's another study right there. And the title of the article is Utility of Routine Vitamin B12 Levels in the Workup of Dementia. Of course, I know this is just focusing on this one topic right here, but if you have severe anxiety or depression, maybe you have severe brain fog, it would not hurt to ask your doctor or your beloved nurse practitioner, which I love nurse practitioners. They're so easy to get along with. You know, that's maybe just a side point here. But if you need help, and they tell you it's going to take 3 months or 4 months before you can see the medical doctor, I don't see it being any harm or problem by requesting to see the nurse practitioner the next day if they are able to see you. And that way you can go in and you can state your case to them and say, I'm concerned that my memory is not what it should be. And they can say, well, why don't we run a homocysteine test? Why don't we look at your vitamin D3 levels? Why don't we check your vitamin B12? You know what? What if it comes back and it truly is low? Isn't that like a home run for everybody? And that is in your best interest. Okay, here's another one right here. This is from the Biology and Psychiatry, 1985. Four patients with pre-senile dementia for over 4 years. And I know this is different than what I just said, but they failed to show any hematologic findings suggesting vitamin B12 deficiencies. Yet, their serum B12 levels were clearly deficient. And so sometimes, and the reason why I'm reading that to you is, sometimes even if the blood work comes back sort of, you know, normal, maybe your range is in the low end of normal or the high end of normal, but you're still in that normal physiological range on the lab test. Well, it's vitamin B12. There's no toxicity. So if you take that with folate or folic acid, well, isn't it interesting? You might get some results. Here's another one. This comes from the journal Age and Aging, 1984. Alzheimer's patients, and that's what they're doing here. They're just measuring Alzheimer patients, and guess what they found? They had lower levels of vitamin B12 at all ages compared to normal patients, okay, with and even other forms of dementia. They showed, but they didn't see any changes to the red blood cells, so they didn't pay attention to it, or they didn't pay as much attention to it. So even if you don't show signs of severe anemia, if your vitamin B12 levels are low, you need to consider that. Here's another one right here. And this comes from the Journal of the American Geriatric Society, and I think that's a fairly prestigious journal, 1986. The title of the article is Pernicious Anemia in the Demented Patient Without Anemia or Macrocytosis. It says a case for early recognition. See, the whole idea of watching and waiting when a person has symptoms like dementia, not a good plan. Here's a study. Two elderly patients presented with a diagnosis of dementia. Both had low levels of vitamin C or B12 or the serum B12, along with an abnormal Schilling test. The Schilling test is another way to assess vitamin B12. It says neither of the patients showed any evidence of anemia or macrocytosis. After receiving B12 injections, there was an improvement in cognitive functions as well as the activities of daily living. Well, what does that mean? That means they could start taking care of themselves again. They could wash dishes. They could prepare meals. I think that's a good one right there. Okay, Let me see, what else did I find? If you want to join me on the radio and ask a question, please do so. The number is 903-586-5257. All right, here's the next one right here. This comes from a German study right here. And this has to do very, very clearly with who's going to be predisposed to developing Alzheimer's or dementia. And this is an animal experimental study, so yeah, they do, you know, do experiments on animals, which I know is not real pleasant, but it's done. Let's go ahead and go to the phone lines first. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I'm listening to your program. And I was wondering, what do you recommend, the B12 injections or the pill?
Well, you could do both of them very easily. So if you have any question about, oh my goodness, am I on this, some type of a decline? Is my brain not processing the way it used to? Then B12 is a water-soluble vitamin. You could definitely take that. One of the best forms is called methylcobalamin.
How do you spell that?
Oh, my goodness. You're going to make me spell it. Okay, here we go. Okay, methyl is M-E-T-H-Y-L. That's methyl. And cobalamin is C-O-B-A-L-A-M-I-N.
Okay.
And that's a methylated form of B12. I don't think I've ever seen a human being ever overdose on vitamin B12.
Well, I've been taking the pill for several years, but my doctor has recommended the shot once a month, and I thought, well...
Well, have you done that?
I have, but I didn't keep it up. I got one, and then I just went back to my pill.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that you saw anything that you might call improvement or a benefit to getting the shot?
I really didn't notice anything. That's why I didn't do it again.
Did he tell you why he wanted to give you a shot of B12?
No, he just said he recommends it for all of his seniors.
Well, I kind of like this doctor. He sounds like a real smart person. I would go back and I would say, yes, I would like to re-enter your program for a shot once a month. Thank you very much.
Should I take the pill too?
I would.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a great day, ma'am. Bye-bye.
You too.
Okay, there's a phone line once again open, 903-586-5257. I know. Is this too much reading these studies to you? Really, what I want to do is I want to give you like all the different tools that you need to take good care of yourself. And quite often what we're told is, you know, and I've discussed this topic before, but I remember specifically, I heard two drug salesmen tell me, this was back in the early 90s, they said, Dr. Morgan, we're 6 months away from a new drug that's going to come to the market. It's going to completely do away with diabetes. No one will ever have it again. Well, obviously, you know the answer to that. That never happened. They believed it was, or they wanted it to. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Okay, so when you call, make sure you turn your radio off. So always turn off the radio. That way I won't hear reverberation, but I think they hung up on themselves. Okay. This article right here comes from the Journal of Applied Nutrition. Let's go to the phone lines instead. That's more exciting. Good morning. How are you today? Can you turn your phone off? Can you turn the radio off, please?
I turned the radio off.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you okay. Dr. Roy, I had a big old, I'll call it a wart, that came up on my forehead, and talked to you about it. You told me about something that was a little oil that you could get, and gave me the name of it. I ordered it, used it, got rid of the wart. I mean, it took several weeks, but actually just scraped it off. And I left that at my previous wife's place, and then when I went back to retrieve it, well, the people that were living there said they didn't know what happened to it.
Oh, no. Well, yeah. Rents, was it the product called Curaderm?
I'm not sure. That doesn't sound like it. It was a little short colored bottle. Not bottle, but...
was it more like a salve that you would squeeze out of a tube like toothpaste?
No, sir. It was a oil.
Okay.
And...
well, they do sell multiple types of oils, and everything from Thuja oil to other ones that you would just apply over and over again because you're trying to get the wart to fall off.
Yeah. I think it started with an M.
Okay. Well, offhand, that doesn't ring a bell. I know I'm not helping, but I can look it up. But a lot of times with a wart, sometimes you can use what's called Thuja oil.
Okay.
I've had some patients use what's called tea tree oil. And maybe that's what the M is from the word Melaleuca.
You know, that sounds like it.
Because the Melaleuca tree, we would call it here in English the tea tree. So you've heard of like tea tree oil that comes from either Australia or New Zealand, someplace like that?
Yeah, it seemed like you were telling me it was some strange place way
yes,
off.
Yes, from way off on the other side of the ocean.
Yeah.
Under the equator, far, far away. Some exotic land. So yeah, that's probably it right there is probably Melaleuca. But they're between tea tree oil and Thuja. I'm trying to think of how to spell Thuja. Maybe it's Thuja. J-A. Yeah.
Yeah. Melaleuca.
So that's one thing that you could look at if you need to make another application to help it the rest of the way.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Have a great day. I appreciate you, buddy.
I appreciate you so much.
Well,
bye-bye.
You're sure welcome. Have a good day. Bye-bye. Okay. There's a study here, a Journal of Applied Nutrition, and there's another one from Behavioral Therapy. The one from Behavioral Therapy is 1988. And they did this experiment where they took people that were the average age of 36 years old. They had 21 women in the study and 2 men. But get this right here. I'm not laughing to make fun of it. It's just kind of funny. They had 21 women and 2 men. Let's go to the phone lines. I'll come back to it. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. I just have a real quick question. Instead of buying bottled water, I know you recommend not to drink the tap water, and I don't like it either. But what about boiling the tap water?
Boiling will kill the germs, but it won't get rid of the fluoride.
Okay. Okay. Well, that was almost...
You know what? It was 2 Saturdays ago. I had to drive across the Neches River Bridge. And I think the bridge there on Highway 175, it separates Cherokee County from Anderson County. But there was a woman there. There's just a natural spring. It's delicious water. It comes out cool. It's free. But she probably had 30 big jugs of water, and she had a van. So evidently she was loading up with that clean spring water. But it's tested to be good.
I live right near there, and someone else told me about that. Okay.
No, in your case, you can just drink straight from the Nature's River, right?
Yeah, right.
So you don't live far from that bridge on 175?
Right. Well, I live in Cove Springs. So.
Okay, yeah. Well, you're just right there on the hill coming out of town from Jacksonville toward the lake. But, yeah, have you seen all that construction right there by the bridge?
Yes, yes.
Oh, how do you feel about that? Is that going to come close? What's going to happen to that house right on the highway that has all those solar panels, you know, 10 yards from the road? They're going to be gone.
Yes. Yes. They're widening the road. So,
but they're going to they're going to widen it on the north side of the highway. Is that correct?
As far as I understand, yeah.
Okay.
But I've talked with a lady that said she was in her grandparents' house, you know, and they had to sell their house because they were widening the roads.
Yes. Eminent domain, they took it. I bet that was rough trying to negotiate that deal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, every so often, I know I'm wasting your time here, but I always turn right off 175 when I want to just drive through the country. And I drive all the way past that big water tower there at Cove Springs, and I turn left so I can take the back roads by Reese. But there's it's so scenic back in there where all those pastures are. You can see for a long way off.
Oh, okay.
It's really, really pretty at sunset. And then also, the other time it's gorgeous is when you're right there on the road as the moon's coming up. Because you're going to see the biggest yellow moon of all time. It's gorgeous.
I love that. You can almost reach out and touch it.
In Cove Springs, you can. I don't know about anywhere else. Well, thank you for your phone call.
Thank you, and God bless you, sir.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Another thing that would be just really, really good to consider, and in no way am I trying to create fear or stress or anxiety, but you just don't have any way of knowing what major event in the world is going to happen next. You're just not. How can you? But if you're trying to use wisdom and knowledge and apply the wits that God's given you, I think it would be a most excellent idea if everyone that wants to have clean water would get some type of a gravity drip water filter, like a Berkey filter. And they have a whole bunch of ones that are very similar, but they are so good at purifying the water. That's what missionaries use around the world. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Thank you very much for your phone call.
Got a question about inflammation. I'm looking for supplements to natural supplements that you would recommend to fight joint inflammation. This past year, I've noticed, and I'm a senior. I'm getting daily, you know, aches and pains. And the web is filled with 10,000 different natural supplements. Do you have anything in mind that is more effective than most?
When is the last time that you've seen John Wayne in one of his westerns?
It's been a while, but I used to watch a lot of them.
Do you remember what he had, what he wore on each wrist?
No.
Copper bracelet. Or copper, really? Copper band, excuse me. Same thing.
Okay.
And so I don't want to make this like a really deep, deep conversation, but why do you think that he would wear copper? Well, it's the oldest remedy of all time for joint pain or joint inflammation.
Okay.
Because it provides copper.
Okay.
I really believe that when you have a house that has copper pipes, that probably could be a very, very good thing for you. But now they're changing everything to what's called PEX. And that blue and red, I've had so many people tell me the rats chew holes in it. Well, they don't chew holes in copper. But copper plays a role by providing you a small amount of copper at helping to combat arthritis.
Okay.
And so that's one thing that I would think of. And so some of the most powerful antioxidants in the human body. Now, this is my opinion. There's going to be some people that argue with me, but some people say melatonin is. I say, no, that's not the case. Some people will say glutathione is or glutathione peroxidase, and I say, no. There's another enzyme system that your body produces to combat inflammation. It's called superoxide dismutase. Now, you do require a certain amount of copper in order to make that work. So that may be one of the pathways. But there are two other enzyme systems that seem to be very powerful antioxidants. One's called ceruloplasmin, and the other one's called ferrooxidase. I butchered that one. But both of those are copper-dependent enzymes. And so what happens is, if you're trying to combat inflammation, whatever the source, the addition of copper could be huge. Now, I always think in terms of, I love the idea of magnesium with copper. Of course, you can get, I usually give them separately, but I think both of them play such a critical role in helping to manage that. Now, if we looked at the botanical kingdom, oh my word, all these amazing things that God has given us that are so good at ridding the body of inflammation. And the good news is, they're not like Tylenol. Tylenol will literally destroy the liver and the kidneys. So will ibuprofen or naproxen sodium, aspirin. We won't talk about that very much. But in the plant kingdom, you've heard of curcumin or turmeric?
Yes, yes.
Comes from a root. So like if you had joint pain, the simplest ones that you could try would be taking some standardized turmeric and or some ginger.
Okay.
The other thing that is really important in trying to help feed that pathway would be fish oil.
All right.
Of course, I think fish oil is pure brain food. You know, you've only got one shot at this body. You're not going to get a replacement one. We have to find a way to take good care of yours. So, turmeric, ginger, fish oil, resveratrol in a lot of people, it's almost magical. I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's like the results are better than what you expect. But a couple of months of taking resveratrol, which is a polyphenol that comes from the skins of grapes. And so sometimes when people drink, you know, the really, really dark wine or dark grape juice, they get a little bit of resveratrol from it. But you can get it in supplement form. A lot of time it comes, the form is called trans resveratrol, but it comes from a plant called Japanese knotweed. I didn't say Japanese knothead. I said Japanese knotweed.
Okay.
And so that's something that you could look at right there. But usually in men that have joint pain, one of the biggest problems of all time is they tend to have this buildup of old iron that begins to rust, and that's causing more inflammation than you can shake a stick at. So the other solution for that is what? It's going to donate or give blood.
Okay.
But to me, okay, you don't accomplish anything that you want without copper.
Okay, so are you the original comment about the copper bracelet, that was just...
Well, the reason I said the copper is because the pathway that gets rid of oxidation is called ferrooxidase. You got to have copper for that. The other one is called ceruloplasmin. You can have your doctor measure that on a blood test. That's the other thing that's huge. And then you have the other enzyme, antioxidant in the body called superoxide dismutase. Huge. I mean, the body will just collapse into utter failure without those. But they're all copper dependent. And I know there used to be a time that we had copper in our soil, and there was copper in the food, but that ship has passed. We don't have that anymore. The soil is that depleted. Now, I know it's going to seem like I'm making a joke, but would you care to guess which food has absolutely the highest amount of copper in the universe? It's called beef liver. People shoot me down right and left on that. But you know what? It gives you what's called bioavailable copper. And so anytime that you put bioavailable copper in the body, whether it's a copper supplement, and there's a lot you can use. I usually use copper glycinate just because it works pretty well. But the moment you start entering copper into the body, it starts pushing fluoride and other toxic chemicals out, which we're living kind of on this fallen planet where every genius thinks we need to add as much fluoride to the toothpaste. And that's why I hate nonstick cookware. It's full of fluoride. If you want to have joint pain and arthritis, fluoride will do it every single time.
Okay.
I think the worst cases of arthritis I've ever seen where the joints just literally deteriorate and you get these calcium deposits, fluoride is almost always part of that equation. Now, if you happen to live in a region of the world where you don't have fluoridated water, it's kind of a big mystery why those people don't have arthritis or dementia, isn't it? So at least if you consider that. But just the concept or the idea of donating some of your blood, what that does is it starts draining some of the old rusted iron. Now, one of the things you could do if you wanted to, you could go and have a blood test and you could ask for them to check for inflammation markers like C-reactive protein or high-sensitivity C-reactive protein. They could check sedimentation rate. They could also measure ferrooxidase, ceruloplasmin. They could measure homocysteine, vitamin D, B12. All those relate to this topic that we have right here. And platelets, that's a good one right there. When the white blood cell count is low, usually your body's just overwhelmed. Probably one of the biggest blood tests of all time is going to be the CBC, which complete blood count. But you're looking at what are called neutrophils and lymphocytes. I know I'm just unloading on you here. Is this too much?
No.
When the neutrophils are above 66 and the lymphocytes are below 22, that is a really, really good indication that you've got way too much inflammation or there's too much oxidation, which means there's a process going on within your body where you're just rusting too quickly. And that's why you have the joint pain.
When I donate blood, typically they tell me I'm at the borderline of having too little iron. So I've started to use cast iron skillets.
No, you're too low in copper. They got that wrong.
Okay.
Now, I'm not trying to be argumentative at all, but if you look at the research on this, they've done the same experiments with animals.
Yes.
And some of them are like, oh my goodness, I'd hate to be part of that experiment. They literally will try to bleed the animal to death within a drop of its life. And then they experiment by giving them things to see what rejuvenates them. And it's almost never iron. I mean, iron does play a role. But like, for example, when you eat red meat, you're getting plenty of iron from that.
Okay.
And by the way, if you use a cast iron skillet, at least you're not using something that's called nonstick Teflon-coated...
Right.
What's that stuff called? Teflon?
Okay.
It's the ones they sell on TV where everything slips and slides around on the skillet and doesn't stick.
Right. All right.
Don't ever wear fire retardant clothing. They sell all sorts of clothing that's fire retardant, but it's just loaded with fluoride. The same reason why you don't want microwave popcorn. How do you think they keep the popcorn bag from catching on fire? They put fire retardant chemicals in it. You don't want that.
Okay, didn't know that.
But if you looked at your blood test and it showed that your neutrophil count was around 66 and your lymphocytes were around 22, either higher or lower, that's a sign of chronic oxidation inflammation. So the whole time that you're telling me about what do I take, but in the back of my mind I'm thinking, well, what's driving the inflammation? Because if we can figure out what's doing that, then that's where you get to have the home run and you start having rejuvenation and healing.
Okay.
So those are some ideas.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it, Doctor.
You're sure welcome. I hope you have a great day, buddy.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You're sure welcome. Bye-bye. All right. There is another phone line open at 903-586-5257. Kind of wish I'd ask him, what do they mean that he's borderline low in iron? Because there is one test called ferritin. How's ferritin spelled? F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N. Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question. I have a friend in Houston who continually has sinus infections. And I think you've talked about that before, and I wrote that down, but I probably need an update on that.
Oh, no, that's good. Yeah.
Give him some advice.
So this is a male friend, right?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
Okay. So the Sloan Kettering Clinic a couple years ago, they did a study, and they said they think they've discovered why some men have chronic sinus infections. They say it's a low-grade yeast or a fungal infection. Now, what I want to do is I want to take this down a different course of action, but let me say this right here. One of the biggest problems with men that have sinus infections, and you're probably going to say, after I tell you this, you're going to say, duh, I knew that. But the issue is when they breathe at night, they do not inhale fully through their nostrils or their nose. They tend to be mouth breathers. And any time that you're a mouth breather at night or you snore a lot, what you're doing is you're not getting the rich oxygen saturation into the turbinates of the nose, which means if you don't get enough air through your nose, you're going to have infections. It's kind of like a double-edged sword. And so one of the ways through that is just doing breathing exercises to retrain the nasal passages to really, really open up. Do you know what ozone is?
Sure, O3.
Exactly. Let me give you an example. The building that my office is in was probably built back in the early 1970s, maybe 72, 73, 74. But if it rains really, really super, super hard and the rain just drives in under that metal roofing or the purling, it can actually cause a little bit of leakage in the roof and you can smell a little bit of mold growing. What I have is I have an ozone machine every so often. I turn it on, and there's nothing that kills the mold as fast as ozone does. And so that might be a little bit of an analogy, but the more that he can learn how to breathe through the nose, that's what's going to open up the sinuses to where they can start to drain. There's a book called The Oxygen Advantage. There's another one written by the same gentleman. His name is Patrick McCowan, called The Breathing Cure. It really does change those breathing exercises. They open up your sinuses, and it changes the facial structure where you can breathe so much better, but it makes you stronger and more infection resistant. But if we went a different direction, I would say vitamin A is one of the most critical ones of all time when it comes to chronic sinus infections. The reason it's called vitamin A is because it's the anti-infection. And so when you have plenty of vitamin A in your sinus passages and in your nose also, you're more resistant against developing a sinus infection. So the things that can be done that are real simple, you could take a teaspoon of like raw salt, put in a cup of warm water, stir it up really, really well, and just snort it into each nostril. If you go to YouTube, they have a technique called the nasal unblocking technique. It's where you push on a nostril and you breathe strongly through one side and then close off the other side. But that works amazing wonders in trying to open that up. So the more air that he can get into his sinuses, that's the solution for fixing this. The other thing that we have to contend with is he may have some type of a food allergy. Number one with sinuses is either sugar or milk, meaning dairy. They actually sell a sinus rinse that has some oregano in it. That's pretty potent. It's strong. After you recommend that, he may never talk to you again because it burns like hellfire. But it can be good at clearing those infections. And they also sell I think the company's called Arm and Hammer, but they have a product called Simply Saline with eucalyptus. Sometimes that is really, really amazing stuff. Initially, those nasal breathing strips that you can tape to your nose at night, those can be a godsend. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a lot of good information.
All right.
I have used what you said before about snorting this raw Himalayan salt at night.
Yeah.
To open up the nasal passages. That's just worked a miracle. So
isn't that amazing?
Yeah,
wow.
Little things like that are very important.
How expensive was the pink Himalayan salt?
Oh, well.
Did you use about a half a penny's worth?
Something like that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's astounding, isn't it?
It really is. I have some people, they respond so well to taking a steam kettle and putting about a half a cup of vinegar to the water that's in it and bring it to a boil. If they can just breathe that vinegar water like a steam bath,
mm-hmm.
towel over their head.
Yes.
If they can do that for 10 minutes, sometimes that does a good job at helping dissolve those biofilms of the infection that build up in the nose. And the sinuses, I meant.
Yes. Well, you have a lot of wonderful information. It's very much appreciated.
Well, you're sure welcome. Thank you so much for your phone call. I'm sure your questions also helped a lot of other folks, so thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Have a great day. Bye-bye. Okay, there's a phone line officially open, 903-586-5257. I've seen some pretty wicked sinus infections in the past. I wouldn't wish them on anybody. I have seen some people get great results from that balloon sinuplasty, where they put a balloon in the nose and pump it up so they can open it up. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Dr. Roy, it's me again.
You got to turn your radio off.
I did.
Okay, good deal.
That lady that wanted some water that it was not polluted.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Tell her to go buy her a dehumidifier.
Yeah, that's a good backup plan. You're right.
And if you can, you can get one over at Home Depot for less than $200.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one that's called, let's see, brand name is Costway. And it makes about a gallon of pure water every 3 hours.
Wow. Is that because we live in a high humidity part of the world?
That is correct.
Well, thank you so much for your recommendation. I appreciate that.
I'll keep it going to keep the moisture out of my guns. And that is the best thing you can have to keep your air conditioner from running so much, too.
Hey, that is a great idea. Thanks.
And anyway, I just had to pass that along because I use that distilled water to put in my steam iron.
Yeah, keep
one
all the calcium out of it.
My steam iron being a widower, so.
Well, hang in there, buddy. I'm really thankful for your call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, you know what? That's not a bad idea, because what if you couldn't get clean water? Well, you just found an instant way to make it from the air that you're breathing. It sucks it right out. I know also, and this just kind of popped in my head, if you were looking for one way to purify the water, they sell water distillers. And then, but if it's distilled water and you were going to drink it, you'd want to put a little pinch of salt in there to add the minerals back to it. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was calling. My mother-in-law is 83, and she has AFib. And the other day they shocked it, but it reverted back to irregular heartbeat.
Yeah.
What is AFib?
Atrial fibrillation is when the upper chamber of the heart gets out of sync and starts beating erratically.
Uh-huh.
And the problem is that valve slaps shut on a bunch of clumpy blood and causes clots to form, potentially. So what we got to do is we're trying to re-regulate and get the heart back into proper rhythm. And there's several ways to go about doing that. Number one, and believe me, I'm not trying to be mean by saying this.
Sure.
But if somebody's got AFib, it might be a good idea to take them off 2 cups of coffee a day with lots of sugar in their diet. So anyway, I'm just sort of joking. But
no.
I'm not saying that for her, because obviously she's perfect with her diet.
Well, we're just wondering, and they're thinking now it may have led into some pneumonia.
Yeah.
Don't know yet. It hasn't been diagnosed. There's some tests coming up.
Well, you know, even that book that I recommended earlier to the gentleman, it's called The Breathing Cure. It is so critical to doing these breathing exercises, because what they do is they take all the stress off the heart. They make the heart function much. The heart just has an easier job of healing and repairing when you do those breathing exercises. They're phenomenal. The Breathing Cure is the name of the book.
Okay.
But if it were me, can I tell you what I would do if it were me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, number one, probably on three separate times a day, I would take between 10 to maybe 30 breaths by using those breath-holding techniques. It's in that book called The Breathing Cure. Usually what I do when I drive to work, I know this is going to sound weird, but, you know, it takes me 25 minutes, so it doesn't matter. So I'll start the breathing process where I inhale very deeply, and what I usually do now is I just count the seconds between the breaths, and I'll go between 4 to 6 seconds after I take a deep breath and just holding my breath. And then I blow out very slowly. A lot of times I'll do it through my mouth so I can just drag it out as long as possible, but basically I hold that for 4 seconds, but basically I just breathe 2 times a minute. I know that doesn't sound right, but it's super, super easy to do. But what
there's no meds or hospitalization.
Yeah, I think you just uncovered a key point to the whole program. Yes, but you know what? Even if I'm really busy and I'm running around the office and stuff and I'm talking to patients and we're working on stuff, I'll say, look at this right here. I'll put the pulse oximeter on my finger. And they'll say, man, your pulse rate's 87 beats a minute. I said, well, I'm working, baby. and then all of a sudden I'll just stop and I'll just breathe twice. And they'll say, that's amazing. It went down to 57. I'm going, well, wow. That's the point. If you'll do these exercises, it will really calm and relax your heart super, super fabulous. And so that's free. But the other thing that I would think of, she needs probably zinc, copper, and magnesium from the mineral kingdom. Mm-hmm. I'm almost willing to bet she's really low or deficient in all three of those.
Well, but iron for sure. That's been diagnosed.
Well, it's really copper. But anyway,
okay.
I'm not trying to be argumentative, but I just told you how many cases I've seen that copper fixes all that. And so it may be that she is iron deficient, but if we can correct that, see, right. if your heart, well, let me say it a different way. Would you say that your heart is really on cruise control if it's just averaging 62 beats a minute?
I would think so.
Yeah, you're right. All the heart problems, literally, are people that have a resting pulse rate above 80 beats a minute. I promise you, it's totally normal for your pulse rate to go up to 120 if you're running from a pack of wolves. That's normal.
Fight or flight.
Exactly. Now, once you get up to the top of the tree, maybe 30 seconds later, you can start to breathe and calm down a little bit, and your pulse rate will go back down. But when you're at rest and your resting pulse rate is above 80 beats a minute, there's just too much stress on the heart.
Okay.
So magnesium plays a huge role in helping to calm that down. It's just all you're doing is just giving the body what it needs. The herb that's probably the king of all herbs for the heart is hawthorn.
Okay.
Of course, I've had so many people come to see me that had very severe congestive heart failure.
Yeah.
And rhodiola is one of the greatest things of all time just to help soothe the body and calm down an overly taxed HPA axis or your fight or flight like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. On the other side of the coin, is a COVID jab. Now, I don't know if she's had it. Is that playing a role with folks that are...
Oh my goodness! I don't want to be negative by saying this, but let me float this your direction. I had a woman come to see me that was 62 with congestive heart failure, and she asked my opinion directly. She said, "Do you think I should have the Johnson & Johnson vaccine?" I said, "Absolutely not." As an opinion,
right?
Because it's been shown to cause clots, and it's gonna, and that's what it does. It goes to the weakened tissue. She passed away promptly, and then her husband got the shot, and he passed away promptly also.
Yeah.
And then the nurse this week was telling me about the 8-year-old boy in her care that got the COVID vaccine. Guess what? He's no longer walking the earth.
Yep.
Now, I don't know.
Two of my grandsons, he's 12. Two of his classmates are similar story.
But it's just a horrible thing. But, yeah, that's one of the things. I'm telling you, it's not natural. It is not normal to grow messenger RNA from aborted fetal cells, then stick it in a human being. That's just bizarre.
Bizarre.
I try hard not to talk about too much because I realize it's so negative, but occasionally you just have to.
Well, truth is truth, though.
Well, and that's the way we have to look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask me, what does it say in the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt not kill. It should be pretty simple, but people don't see it that way.
Well, that was just a side note. I don't know the story on there. I just was curious, since I had your opinion.
No, but thank you very much for your phone call. We're officially all out of time, but I really do appreciate you. Thank you so much for your phone call,
sir. Thank you, Dr. Morgan. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.